aback, Rhysand's back as he leaned against the bedroom door. Get out. Ianthe gave a little pout, bending her knee and shifting her legs wider, baring herself to him. I see the way you look at me, High Lord. You see what you want to see. We said. The door opened beside him. Get out. A coy tilt of her lips. I heard you like to play games. Her slender hand drifted low, trailing past her belly button. I think you'll find me a diverting playmate. Icy wrath crept through me, him, as he debated the merits of splattering her on the walls and how much of an inconvenience it'd cause. She'd hounded him relentlessly, stalked the other males, too. Azrael had left last night because of it. And Moore was about one more comment away from snapping her neck. I thought your allegiance lay with other courts. His voice was so cold, the voice of the High Lord. My alliance lies with the future of Prithian, with the true power in this land. Her fingers slid between her legs and halted. Her gasp cleaved the room as he sent a tendril of power blasting for her, pinning that arm to the bed, away from herself. Do you know what a union between us could do for Prithian? For the world? She said, eyes devouring him still. You mean yourself. Our offspring could rule Prithian. Cruel amusement danced through him. So you want my crown and for me to play stud? She tried to writhe her body, but his power held her. I don't see anyone else worthy of the position. She'd be a problem, now and later. He knew it. Kill her now. End the threat before it began. Face the wrath of the other high priestesses, or see what happened. Get out of my bed, get out of my room, and get out of my court. He released his power's grip to allow her to do so. Ianthe's eyes darkened, and she slithered to her feet, not bothering with her clothes, draped over his favorite chair. Each step toward him had her generous breasts bobbing. She stopped barely a foot away. You have no idea what I can make you feel, High Lord. She reached a hand for him, right between his legs. His power lashed around her fingers before she could grab him. He crunched the power down, twisting. Ianthe screamed. She tried backing away, but his power froze her in place. So much power, so easily controlled, roiling around her, contemplating ending her existence like an asp surveying a mouse. Rhys leaned close to breathe into her ear. Don't ever touch me. Don't ever touch another male in my court. His power snapped bones and tendons, and she screamed again.
Your hand will heal, he said, stepping back.
The next time you touch me or anyone in my lands, you will find that the rest of you will not fare so well. Tears of agony ran down her face, the effect wasted by the hatred lighting her eyes. You will regret this, she hissed. He laughed softly, a lover's laugh, and a flicker of power had her thrown onto her ass in the hallway. Her clothes followed a heartbeat later. Then the door slammed. Like a pair of scissors through a taut ribbon, the memory was severed, the shield behind me fell, and I stumbled back, blinking. Rule one, Rhys told me, his eyes glazed with the rage of that memory. Don't go into someone's mind unless you hold the way open. A Daemadi might leave their minds spread wide for you and then shut you inside, turn you into their willing slave. A chill went down my spine at the thought. But what he'd shown me.
Rule 2, he said, his face hard as stone.
When was that? I blurted. I knew him well enough not to doubt its truth. When did that happen between you?
The ice remained in his eyes.
100 years ago, at the Court of Nightmares. I allowed her to visit after she'd begged for years, insisting she wanted to build ties between the Night Court and the priestesses. I'd heard rumors about her nature, but she was young and untried, and I hoped that perhaps a new high priestess might indeed be the change her order needed. It turned out that she was already well-trained by some of her less benevolent sisters.
I swallowed hard, my heart thundering. She didn't act that way. Lucien.
Lucien had hated her, had made vague, vicious allusions to not liking her, to being approached by her.
I was going to throw up. Had she pursued him like that? Had he been forced to say yes because of her position? And if I went back to the Spring Court one day, how would I ever convince Tamlin to dismiss her? What if, now that I was gone, she was...
Rule 2, Rhys finally went on. Be prepared to see things you might not like.
Only 50 years later, Amarantha had come. And done exactly to Rhys what he'd wanted to kill Ianthe for. He'd let it happen to him. To keep them safe. To keep Azrael and Cassian from the nightmares that would haunt him forever. From enduring any more pain than what they'd suffered as children. I lifted my head to ask him more. But Rhys had vanished. Alone, I peeled off my clothes, struggling with the buckles and straps he'd put on me. When had it been? An hour or two ago? It felt as if a lifetime had passed, and I was now a certified book tracker, it seemed. Better than a party-planning wife for breeding little high lords. What Ianthe had wanted to make me, to serve whatever agenda she had. The bath was indeed hot, as he'd promised. And I mulled over what he'd shown me, seeing that hand again and again reach between his legs, the ownership and arrogance in that gesture. I shut out the memory, the bath water suddenly cold.
Chapter 22.
Word still hadn't come from the summer court the following morning, so Rhysand made good on his decision to bring us to the mortal realm.
What does one wear, exactly, in the human lands?
Moore said from where she sprawled across the foot of my bed. For someone who claimed to have been out drinking and dancing until the mother knew when, she appeared unfairly perky. Cassian and Azrael, grumbling and wincing over breakfast, had looked like they'd been run over by wagons, repeatedly. Some small part of me wondered what it would be like to go out with them, to see what Valaris might offer at night. I rifled through the clothes in my armoire. Layers, I said. They cover everything up. The décolletage might be a little daring depending on the event, but everything else gets hidden beneath skirts and petticoats and nonsense.
Sounds like the women are used to not having to run. Or fight. I don't remember it being that way 500 years ago.
I paused on an ensemble of turquoise with accents of gold. Rich, bright, regal. Even with the wall, the threat of fairies remained, so surely practical clothes would have been necessary to run, to fight any that crept through. I wonder what changed. I pulled out the top and pants for her approval. Moore merely nodded. No commentary like Ianthe might have provided. No beatific intervention.
I shoved away the thought, and the memory of what she'd tried to do to Reese, and went on. Nowadays, most women wed, bear children, and then plan their children's marriages. Some of the poor might work in the fields, and a rare few are mercenaries or hired soldiers, but the wealthier they are, the more restricted their freedoms and roles become. You'd think that money would buy you the ability to do whatever you pleased. Some of the high fae, Moore said, pulling at an embroidered thread in my blanket, are the same. I slipped behind the dressing screen to untie the robe I'd donned moments before she'd entered to keep me company while I prepared for our journey today. In the Court of Nightmares, she went on, that voice falling soft and a bit cold once more, females are prized. Our virginity is guarded, then sold off to the highest bidder. Whatever male will be of the most advantage to our families. I kept dressing, if only to give myself something to do while the horror of what I began to suspect slithered through my bones and blood. I was born stronger than anyone in my family, even the males, and I couldn't hide it because they could smell it. The same way you can smell a High Lord's heir before he comes to power, the power leaves a mark, an echo. When I was 12, before I bled, I prayed it meant no male would take me as a wife, that I would escape what my elder cousins had endured. Loveless, sometimes brutal marriages. I tugged my blouse over my head and buttoned the velvet cuffs at my wrists before adjusting the sheer turquoise sleeves into place. But then I began bleeding a few days after I turned 17, and the moment my first blood came, my power awoke in full force, and even that God's damned mountain trembled around us. But instead of being horrified, every single ruling family in the Hewn City saw me as a prize mare. Saw that prize and wanted it bred into their bloodline over and over again. What about your parents? I managed to say, slipping my feet into the midnight blue shoes. It'd be the end of winter in the mortal lands. Most shoes would be useless. Actually, my current ensemble would be useless, but only for the moments I'd be outside, bundled up. My family was beside themselves with glee. They could have their pick of an alliance with any of the other ruling families. My pleas for a choice in the matter went unheard. She got out, I reminded myself. Moore got out, and now lived with people who cared for her, who loved her. The rest of the story, Moore said as I emerged, is long and awful, and I'll tell you some other time. I came in here to say I'm not going with you to the mortal realm. Because of how they treat women. Her rich brown eyes were bright, but calm. When the queens come, I will be there. I wish to see if I recognize any of my long-dead friends in their faces, but I don't think I would be able to behave with any others.
Did Reese tell you not to go? I said tightly.
No, she said, snorting. He tried to convince me to come, actually. He said I was being ridiculous. But Cassian, he gets it. The two of us wore him down last night.
My brows rose a bit. Why, they'd gone out and gotten drunk, no doubt, to ply their High Lord with alcohol.
Moore shrugged at the unasked question in my eyes. Cassian helped Reese get me out. Before either had the real rank to do so, for Reese, getting caught would have been a mild punishment, perhaps a bit of social shunning, but Cassian, he risked everything to make sure I stayed out of that court. And he laughs about it, but he believes he's a low-born bastard, not worthy of his rank or life here. He has no idea that he's worth more than any other male I met in that court, and outside of it. Him and Azrael, that is. Yes, Azrael, who kept a step away, whose shadows trailed him and seemed to fade in her presence. I opened my mouth to ask about her history with him, but the clock chimed 10. Time to go. My hair had been arranged before breakfast in a braided coronet atop my head, a small diadem of gold, flecked with lapis lazuli, set before it. Matching earrings dangled low enough to brush the sides of my neck, and I picked up the twisting gold bracelets that had been left on the dresser, sliding one onto either wrist. Moore made no comment, and I knew that if I had worn nothing but my undergarments, she would have told me to own every inch of it. I turned to her. I'd like my sisters to meet you. Maybe not today, but if you ever feel like it. She cocked her head. I rubbed the back of my bare neck. I want them to hear your story, and know that there is a special strength. As I spoke, I realized I needed to hear it, know it, too. A special strength in enduring such dark trials and hardships, and still remaining warm and kind, still willing to trust and reach out. Moore's mouth tightened, and she blinked a few times. I went for the door, but paused with my hand on the knob. I'm sorry if I was not as welcoming to you as you were to me when I arrived at the night court. I'm trying to learn how to adjust. A pathetic, inarticulate way of explaining how ruined I'd become. But Moore hopped off the bed, opened the door for me, and said, "There are good days and hard days for me, even now. Don't let the hard days win." Today, it seemed, would indeed be yet another hard day. With Rhys, Cassian, and Azriel ready to go, Amryn and Moore remaining in Valaris to run the city and plan our inevitable trip to Highburn, I was left with only one choice: who to fly with. Rhys would winnow us off the coast, right to the invisible line where the wall bisected our world. There was a tear in its magic about half a mile offshore, which we'd fly through. But standing in that hallway, all of them in their fighting leathers and me bundled in a heavy fur-lined cloak, I took one look at Rhys and felt those hands on my thighs again. Felt how it had been to look inside his mind. Felt his cold rage. Felt him defend himself, his people, his friends, using the power and masks in his arsenal. He'd seen and endured such unspeakable things, and yet his hands on my thighs had been gentle, the touch like... I didn't let myself finish the thought as I said, "I'll fly with Azriel." Rhys and Cassian looked as if I'd declared I wanted to parade through Valaris in nothing but my skin, but the Shadow Singer merely bowed his head and said,
"Of course."
And that, thankfully, was that. Rhys winnowed in Cassian first, returning a heartbeat later for me and Azriel. The Spymaster had waited in silence. I tried not to look too uncomfortable as he scooped me into his arms, those shadows that whispered to him stroking my neck, my cheeks. Rhys was frowning a bit, and I just gave him a sharp look and said, "Don't let the wind ruin my hair." He snorted, gripped Azriel's arm, and we all vanished into a dark wind. Stars and blackness, Azriel's scarred hands clenching tightly around me, my arms entwined around his neck, bracing, waiting, counting. The blinding sunlight, roaring wind, a plunge down, down. Then we tilted, shooting straight. Azriel's body was warm and hard, though those brutalized hands were considerate as he gripped me. No shadows trailed us, as if he'd left them in Valaris. Below, ahead, behind, the vast blue sea stretched. Above, fortresses of clouds plodded along, and to my left,
a dark smudge on the horizon. Land. Spring Court land. I wondered if Tamlin was on the western sea border. He'd once hinted about trouble there. Could he sense me? Sense us now? I didn't let myself think about it. Not as I felt the wall. As a human, it had been nothing but an invisible shield. As a fairy, I couldn't see it, but I could hear it crackling with power, the tang of it coating my tongue.
It's abhorrent, isn't it?
Asriel said, his low voice nearly swallowed up by the wind. I can see why we were deterred for all these centuries, I admitted. Every heartbeat had us racing closer to that gargantuan, nauseating sense of power.
You'll get used to it, the wording, he said,
clinging to him so tightly I couldn't see his face. I watched the light shift inside the sapphire siphon instead, as if it were the great eye of some half-slumbering beast from a frozen wasteland. I don't really know where I fit in anymore, I admitted, perhaps only because the wind was screeching around us and Rhys had already winnowed ahead to where Cassian's dark form flew, beyond the wall.
I've been alive almost 5.5 centuries, and I'm not sure of that either, Asriel said.
I tried to pull back to read the beautiful, icy face, but he tightened his grip, a silent warning to brace myself. How Asriel knew where the cleft was, I had no idea. It all looked the same to me. Invisible, open sky. But I felt the wall as we swept through. Felt it lunge for me, as if enraged we'd slipped past. Felt the power flare and try to close that gap, but failing. Then we were out. The wind was biting. The temperature so cold it snatched the breath from me. That bitter wind seemed somehow less alive than the spring air we'd left behind. Asriel banked, veering toward the coastline, where Rhys and Cassian were now sweeping over the land. I shivered in my fur-lined cloak, clinging to Asriel's warmth. We cleared a sandy beach at the base of white cliffs, and flat, snowy land dotted with winter-ravaged forests spread beyond them. The human lands. My home. Chapter 23. It had been a year since I had stalked through that labyrinth of snow and ice and killed a fairy with hate in my heart. My family's emerald-roofed estate was as lovely at the end of winter as it had been in the summer. A different sort of beauty, though. The pale marble seemed warm against the stark snow piled high across the land, and bits of evergreen and holly adorned the windows, the archways, and the lampposts. The only bit of decoration, of celebration, humans bothered with. Not when they'd banned and condemned every holiday after the war, all a reminder of their immortal overseers. 3 months with Amarantha had destroyed me. I couldn't begin to imagine what millennia with high fae like her might do. The scars it'd leave on a culture, a people. My people. Or so they had once been. Hood up, fingers tucked into fur-lined pockets of my cloak, I stood before the double doors of the house, listening to the clear ringing of the bell I'd pulled a heartbeat before. Behind me, hidden by Rhys's glamours, my three companions waited, unseen. I'd told them it would be best if I spoke to my family first, alone. I shivered, craving the moderate winter of Valaris, wondering how it could be so temperate in the far north. Everything in Prithian was strange. Perhaps when the wall hadn't existed,
When magic had flowed freely between realms, the seasonal differences hadn't been so vast. The door opened, and a merry-faced, round housekeeper, Mrs. Laurent, I recalled, squinted at me. "May I help?" The words trailed off as she noticed my face. With the hood on, my ears and crown were hidden, but that glow, that preternatural stillness? She didn't open the door wider. "I'm here to see my family," I choked out.
Your father is away on business, but your sister's..."
She didn't move. She knew. She could tell there was something different, something off. Her eyes darted around me. No carriage, no horse, no footprints through the snow. Her face blanched, and I cursed myself for not thinking of it.
"Mrs. Laurent?"
Something in my chest broke at Elaine's voice from the hall behind her. At the sweetness and youth and kindness, untouched by Prithian, unaware of what I'd done, become. I backed away a step. I couldn't do this. Couldn't bring this upon them. Then Elaine's face appeared over Mrs. Laurent's round shoulder. Beautiful. She'd always been the most beautiful of us, soft and lovely, like a summer dawn. Elaine was exactly as I'd remembered her, the way I'd made myself remember her in those dungeons, when I told myself that if I failed, if Amarantha crossed the wall, she'd be next. The way she'd be next if the King of Highburn shattered the wall, if I didn't get the Book of Breathings. Elaine's golden brown hair was half up, her pale skin creamy and flushed with color, and her eyes, like molten chocolate, were wide as they took me in. They filled with tears and silently overran, spilling down those lovely cheeks. Mrs. Laurent didn't yield an inch. She'd shut this door in my face the moment I so much as breathed wrong. Elaine lifted a slender hand to her mouth as her body shook with a sob. "Elaine," I said hoarsely. Footsteps on the sweeping stairs behind them, then,
"Mrs. Laurent, draw up some tea and bring it to the drawing room."
The housekeeper looked to the stairs, then to Elaine, then to me. A phantom in the snow. The woman merely gave me a look that promised death if I harmed my sisters as she turned into the house, leaving me before Elaine, still quietly crying. But I took a step over the threshold and looked up the staircase. To where Nesta stood, a hand braced on the rail, staring as if I were a ghost. The house was beautiful. But there was something untouched about it, something new compared to the age and worn love of Rhys's homes in Valaris. And seated before the carved marble sitting room hearth, my hood on, hands outstretched toward the roaring fire, I felt like they had let in a wolf, a wraith. I had become too big for these rooms, for this fragile mortal life. Too stained and wild and powerful. And I was about to bring that permanently into their lives as well. Where Rhys, Cassian, and Azrael were, I didn't know. Perhaps they stood as shadows in the corner, watching. Perhaps they'd remained outside in the snow. I wouldn't put it past Cassian and Azrael to be now flying the grounds, inspecting the layout, making wider circles until they reached the village, my ramshackle old cottage, or maybe even the forest itself. Nesta looked the same, but older. Not in her face, which was as grave and stunning as before, but in her eyes, in the way she carried herself. Seated across from me on a small sofa, my sisters stared and waited. I said, "Where is father?" It felt like the only safe thing to say.
"In Neva," Nesta said, naming one of the largest cities on the continent. "Trading with some merchants from the other half of the world, and attending a summit about the threat above the wall. A threat I wonder if you've come back to warn us about." No words of relief, of love, never from her.
Elaine lifted her teacup.
"Whatever the reason, Feyre, we are happy to see you, alive. We thought you were..."
I pulled my hood back before she could go on. Elaine's teacup rattled in its saucer as she noticed my ears, my longer, slender hands, the face that was undeniably Fay.
"I was dead," I said roughly. "I was dead, and then I was reborn. Remade."
Elaine set her shivering teacup onto the low-lying table between us. Amber liquid splashed over the side, pooling in the saucer. And as she moved, Nesta angled herself, ever so slightly, between me and Elaine. It was Nesta's gaze I held as I said, "I need you to listen." They were both wide-eyed, but they did. I told them my story. In as much detail as I could endure, I told them of Under the Mountain, of my trials and Amarantha. I told them about death and rebirth. Explaining the last few months, however, was harder, so I kept it brief. But I explained what needed to happen here, the threat Highburn posed. I explained what this house needed to be, what we needed to be, and what I needed from them. And when I finished, they remained wide-eyed, silent. It was Elaine who at last said,
You want other High Fae to come here? And the Queens of the Realm?"
I nodded slowly.
"Find somewhere else," Nesta said.
I turned to her, already pleading, bracing for a fight.
"Find somewhere else," Nesta said again, straight-backed. "I don't want them in my house or near Elaine."
"Nesta, please," I breathed. "There is nowhere else, nowhere I can go without someone hunting me, crucifying me.
And what of us? When the people around here learn we're Fae sympathizers, are we any better than the children of the blessed, then? Any standing, any influence we have, gone. And Elaine's wedding."
"Wedding?" I blurted. I hadn't noticed the pearl and diamond ring on her finger, the dark metal band glinting in the firelight. Elaine's face was pale, though, as she looked at it.
"In 5 months," Nesta said, "she's marrying a lord's son. And his father has devoted his life to hunting down your kind when they cross the wall."
"Your kind."
"So there will be no meeting here," Nesta said, shoulders stiff. "There will be no Fae in this house."
"Do you include me in that declaration?" I said quietly. Nesta's silence was answer enough. But Elaine said,
"Nesta."
Slowly, my eldest sister looked at her.
"Nesta,"
Elaine said again, twisting her hands,
if we do not help Feyre, there won't be a wedding. Even Lord Nolan's battlements and all his men couldn't save me from them."
Nesta didn't so much as flinch. Elaine pushed.
"We keep it secret. We sent the servants away. With the spring approaching, they'll be glad to go home. And if Feyre needs to be in and out for meetings, she'll send word ahead, and we'll clear them out. Make up excuses to send them on holidays. Father won't be back until the summer anyway. No one will know. She put a hand on Nesta's knee, the purple of my sister's gown nearly swallowing up the ivory hand. Feyre gave and gave for years. Let us now help her, help others. My throat was tight and my eyes burned. Nesta studied the dark ring on Elaine's finger, the way she still seemed to cradle it. A lady. That's what Elaine would become, what she was risking for this. I met Nesta's gaze. There is no other way. Her chin lifted slightly. We'll send the servants away tomorrow. Today, I pushed. We don't have any time to lose. Order them to leave now.
I'll do it, Elaine said, taking a deep breath and squaring her shoulders.
She didn't wait for either of us before she strode out, graceful as a doe. Alone with Nesta, I said.
Is he good? The Lord's son she's to marry?
She thinks he is. She loves him like he is.
And what do you think?
Nesta's eyes, my eyes, our mother's eyes, met mine.
His father built a wall of stone around their estate so high even the trees can't reach over it. I think it looks like a prison.
Have you said anything to her?
No. The son, Grayson, is kind enough. As smitten with Elaine as she is with him. It's the father I don't like. He sees the money she has to offer their estate, and his crusade against the Fae.
But the man is old. He'll die soon enough. Hopefully.
A shrug. Then Nesta asked, Your High Lord, you went through all that. She waved a hand at me, my ears, my body, and it still did not end well. I was heavy in my veins again.
That lord built a wall to keep the Fae out. My High Lord wanted to keep me caged in.
Why? He let you come back here all those months ago.
To save me, protect me. And I think what happened to him, to us under the mountain, broke him.
Perhaps more than it had broken me.
The drive to protect us at all costs, even my own well-being. I think he wanted to stifle it, but he couldn't. He couldn't let go of it.
There was much I still had to do, I realized, to settle things. Settle myself.
And now you are at a new court.
Not quite a question, but I said,
Would you like to meet them?
Chapter 24. It took hours for Elaine to work her charm on the staff, to swiftly pack their bags and leave, each with a purse of money to hasten the process. Mrs. Laurent, though the last to depart, promised to keep what she'd seen to herself. I didn't know where Rhys, Cassian, and Azrael had been waiting, but when Mrs. Laurent had hauled herself into the carriage crammed with the last of the staff, heading down to the village to catch transportation to wherever they all had family, there was a knock on the door. The light was already fading, and the world outside was thick with shades of blue and white and gray, stained golden as I opened the front door and found them waiting. Nesta and Elaine were in the large dining room, the most open space in the house. Looking at Rhys, Cassian, and Azrael, I knew I'd been right to select it as the meeting spot. They were enormous, wild and rough and ancient. Rhys's brows lifted.
You'd think they'd been told plague had befallen the house.
I pulled the door open wide enough to let them in, then quickly shut it against the bitter cold. My sister Elaine can convince anyone to do anything with a few smiles. Cassian let out a low whistle as he turned in place, surveying the grand entrance hall, the ornate furniture, the paintings. All of it paid for by Tamlin, initially. He'd taken such care of my family, yet his own. I didn't want to think about his family, murdered by a rival court for whatever reason no one had ever explained to me. Not now that I was living amongst them. He'd been good. There was a part of Tamlin that was good. Yes, he'd given me everything I needed to become myself, to feel safe. And when he got what he wanted, he'd stopped. Had tried, but not really. He'd let himself remain blind to what I needed after Amarantha.
Your father must be a fine merchant, Cassian said. I've seen castles with less wealth.
I found Rhys studying me, a silent question written across his face. I answered, My father is away on business, and attending a meeting in Neva about the threat of Prithian.
Prithian? Cassian said, twisting toward us. Not Highburn?
It's possible my sisters were mistaken. Your lands are foreign to them. They merely said, above the wall. I assumed they thought it was Prithian. Azriel came forward on feet as silent as a cat's.
If humans are aware of the threat, rallying against it, then that might give us an advantage while contacting the Queens.
Rhys was still watching me, as if he could see the weight that had pressed into me since arriving here. The last time I'd been in this house, I'd been a woman in love. Such frantic, desperate love that I went back into Prithian. I went under the mountain as a mere human. As fragile as my sisters now seemed to me.
Come,
Rhys said, offering me a subtle, understanding nod before motioning to lead the way.
Let's make this introduction.
My sisters were standing by the window, the light of the chandeliers coaxing the gold in their hair to glisten. So beautiful and young and alive. But when would that change? How would it be to speak to them when I remained this way, while their skin had grown paper thin and wrinkled, their backs curved with the weight of years, their white hands speckled? I would be barely into my immortal existence when theirs was wiped out like a candle before a cold breath. But I could give them a few good years, safe years, until then. I crossed the room, the three males a step behind, the wooden floors as shining and polished as a mirror beneath us. I had removed my cloak now that the servants were gone, and it was to me, not the Illyrians, that my sisters first looked. At the fey clothes, the crown, the jewelry. A stranger. This part of me was now a stranger to them. Then they took in the winged males, or two of them. Rhys's wings had vanished, his leathers replaced with his fine black jacket and pants. My sisters both stiffened at Cassian and Azriel, at those mighty wings tucked in tight to powerful bodies, at the weapons, and then at the devastatingly beautiful faces of all three males. Elaine, to her credit, did not faint. And Nesta, to hers, did not hiss at them. She just took a not-so-subtle step in front of Elaine and ducked her fisted hand behind her simple, elegant amethyst gown. The movement did not go unnoticed by my companions. I halted a good 4 feet away, giving my sisters breathing space in a room that had suddenly been deprived of all air. I said to the males, My sisters,
Nesta and Elaine Archeron. I had not thought of my family name, had not used it for years and years. Because even when I had sacrificed and hunted for them, I had not wanted my father's name. Not when he sat before that little fire and let us starve, let me walk into the woods alone. I'd stopped using it the day I'd killed that rabbit and felt its blood stain my hands, the same way the blood of those fairies had marred it years later, like an invisible tattoo. My sisters did not curtsy. Their hearts wildly pounded, even Nesta's, and the tang of their terror coated my tongue. Cassian, I said, inclining my head to the left. Then I shifted to the right, grateful those shadows were nowhere to be found, as I said, Azriel. I half-turned. And Rhysand, High Lord of the Night Court. Rhys had dimmed it too, I realized. The night rippling off him, the otherworldly grace and thrum of power. But looking in those star-flecked violet eyes, no one would ever mistake him for anything but extraordinary. He bowed to my sisters.
Thank you for your hospitality and generosity, he said with a warm smile.
But there was something strained in it. Elaine tried to return the smile, but failed. And Nesta just looked at the three of them, then at me, and said,
The cook left dinner on the table. We should eat before it goes cold.
She didn't wait for my agreement before striding off, right to the head of the polished cherry table. Elaine rasped,
Nice to meet you.
Before hustling after her, the silk skirts of her cobalt dress whispering over the parquet floor. Cassian was grimacing as we trailed them. Rhys's brows were raised, and Azriel looked more inclined to blend into the nearest shadow and avoid this conversation altogether. Nesta was waiting at the head of the table, a queen ready to hold court. Elaine trembled in the upholstered, carved wood chair to her left. I did them all a favor and took the one to Nesta's right. Cassian claimed the spot beside Elaine, who clenched her fork as if she might wield it against him, and Rhys slid into the seat beside me, Azriel on his other side. A faint smile bloomed upon Azriel's mouth as he noticed Elaine's fingers white-knuckled on that fork, but he kept silent, focusing instead, as Cassian was subtly trying to do, on adjusting his wings around a human chair. Cauldron, damn me, I should have remembered. Though I doubted either would appreciate it if I now brought in two stools. I sighed through my nose and yanked the lids off the various dishes and casseroles. Poached salmon with dill and lemon from the hothouse, whipped potatoes, roast chicken with beets and turnips from the root cellar, and some casserole of egg, game meat, and leeks. Seasonal food, whatever they had left at the end of the winter. I scooped food onto my plate, the sounds of my sisters and companions doing the same, filling the silence. I took a bite and found my cringe. Once, this food would have been rich and flavorful. Now it was ash in my mouth. Rhys was digging into his chicken without hesitation. Cassian and Azriel ate as if they hadn't had a meal in months. Perhaps being warriors, fighting in wars, had given them the ability to see food as strength and put taste aside. I found Nesta watching me. Is there something wrong with our food? She said flatly. I made myself take another bite, each movement of my jaw an effort.
No.
I swallowed and gulped down a healthy drink of water.
So you can't eat normal food anymore, or are you too good for it?
A question and a challenge. Rhys's fork clanked on his plate. Elaine made a small, distressed noise. And though Nesta had let me use this house,
though she'd tried to cross the wall for me and we'd worked out a tentative truce, the tone, the disgust and disapproval. I laid my hand flat on the table. I can eat, drink, fuck, and fight just as well as I did before. Better even.
Cassian choked on his water. Azrael shifted on his seat, angling to spring between us if need be. Nesta let out a low laugh.
But I could taste fire in my mouth, hear it roaring in my veins, and a blind, solid tug on the bond, cooling darkness sweeping into me, my temper, my senses, calming that fire. I scrambled to throw my mental shields up, but they were intact. Rhys didn't so much as blink at me before he said evenly to Nesta,
"If you ever come to Prithian, you will discover why your food tastes so different."
Nesta looked down her nose at him. "I have little interest in ever setting foot in your land, so I'll have to take your word on it."
"Nesta, please," Elaine murmured.
Cassian was sizing up Nesta, a gleam in his eyes that I could only interpret as a warrior finding himself faced with a new, interesting opponent.
Then, mother above, Nesta shifted her attention to Cassian, noticing that gleam, what it meant. She snarled softly, "What are you looking at?" Cassian's brows rose, little amusement to be found now. "Someone who let her younger sister risk her life every day in the woods while she did nothing. Someone who let a 14-year-old child go out into that forest so close to the wall."
My face began heating, and I opened my mouth.
"To say what? I don't know." "Your sister died. Died to save my people. She's willing to do so again to protect you from war. So don't expect me to sit here with my mouth shut while you sneer at her for a choice she did not get to make, and insult my people in the process."
Nesta didn't bat an eyelash as she studied the handsome features, the muscled torso, then turned to me, dismissing him entirely. Cassian's face went almost feral, a wolf who had been circling a doe, only to find a mountain cat wearing its hide instead.
Elaine's voice wobbled as she noted the same thing and quickly said to him,
It is very hard, you understand, to accept it."
I realized the dark metal of her ring. It was iron. Even though I had told them about iron being useless, there it was. The gift from her fey-hating, soon-to-be husband's family. Elaine cast pleading eyes on Rhys, then Azrael, such mortal fear coating her features, her scent.
"We are raised this way. We hear stories of your kind crossing the wall to hurt us. Our own neighbor, Claire Better, was taken, her family murdered."
A naked body spiked to a wall, broken, dead, nailed there for months. Rhys was staring at his plate, unmoving, unblinking. He had given Amarantha Claire's name, given it despite knowing I'd lied to him about it. Elaine said,
"It's all very disorienting."
"I can imagine," Azrael said. Cassian flashed him a glare, but Azrael's attention was on my sister, a polite, bland smile on his face. Her shoulders loosened a bit. I wondered if Rhys's spymaster often got his information through stone-cold manners as much as stealth and shadows. Elaine sat a little higher as she said to Cassian,
"And as for Feyre's hunting during those years, it was not Nesta's neglect alone that is to blame. We were scared and had received no training, and everything had been taken, and we failed her, both of us."
Nesta said nothing, her back rigid.
Rhys gave me a warning look. I gripped Nesta's arm, drawing her attention to me. Can we just start over?
I could almost taste her pride roiling in her veins, barking to not back down. Cassian, damn him, gave her a taunting grin. But Nesta merely hissed, "Fine," and went back to eating.
Cassian watched every bite she took, every bob of her throat as she swallowed.
I forced myself to clean my plate, aware of Nesta's own attention on my eating.
Elaine said to Azriel, perhaps the only two civilized ones here, "Can you truly fly?"
He set down his fork, blinking. I might have even called him self-conscious. He said,
"Yes. Cassian and I hail from a race of fairies called Illyrians. We're born hearing the song of the wind."
"That's very beautiful," she said. "Is it not frightening, though, to fly so high?"
"It is, sometimes," Azriel said.
Cassian tore his relentless attention from Nesta long enough to nod his agreement.
"If you are caught in a storm, if the current drops away. But we are trained so thoroughly that the fear is gone before we're out of swaddling."
And yet Azriel had not been trained until long after that.
"You get used to the wording," he'd told me earlier.
How often did he have to remind himself to use such words? Did we and our and us taste as foreign on his tongue as they did on mine?
"You look like High Fae," Nesta cut in, her voice like a honed blade. "But you are not?"
"Only the High Fae who look like them,"
Cassian drawled, waving a hand to me and Rhys, "are High Fae. Everyone else, any other differences mark you as what they like to call lesser fairies."
Rhysand said at last, "It's become a term used for ease, but masks a long bloody history of injustices. Many lesser fairies resent the term and wish for us all to be called one thing."
"Rightly so," Cassian said, drinking from his water.
Nesta surveyed me.
"But you are not High Fae, not to begin. So what do they call you?"
I couldn't tell if it was a jab or not. Rhys said,
"Feyre is whoever she chooses to be."
Nesta now examined us all, raising her eyes to that crown. But she said,
"Write your letter to the queens tonight. Tomorrow, Elaine and I will go to the village to dispatch it. If the queens do come here," she added, casting a frozen glare at Cassian, "I'd suggest bracing yourselves for prejudices far deeper than ours, and contemplating how you plan to get us all out of this mess should things go sour."
"We'll take that into account," Rhys said smoothly.
Nesta went on, utterly unimpressed by any of us.
"I assume you'll want to stay the night."
Rhys glanced at me in silent question. We could easily leave, the males finding the way home in the dark, but too soon, perhaps, the world would go to hell.
I said, "If it's not too much trouble, then yes. We'll leave after breakfast tomorrow." Nesta didn't smile, but Elaine beamed.
"Good. I think there are a few bedrooms ready."
"We'll need two," Rhys interrupted quietly. "Next to each other with two beds each."
I narrowed my brows at him. Rhys explained to me, "Magic is different across the wall, so our shields, our senses might not work right. I'm taking no chances, especially in a house with a woman betrothed to a man who gave her an iron engagement ring."
Elaine flushed a bit.
The bedrooms that have two beds aren't next to each other," she murmured.
I sighed. "We'll move things around, it's fine. This one," I added with a glare in Rhys's direction,
is only cranky because he's old and it's past his bedtime. Rhys chuckled, Cassian's wrath slipping enough that he grinned, and Elaine, noticing Azrael's ease as proof that things weren't indeed about to go badly, offered one of her own as well. Nesta just rose to her feet, a slim pillar of steel, and said to no one in particular, "If we're done eating, then this meal is over." And that was that. Rhys wrote the letter for me, Cassian and Azrael chiming in with corrections, and it took us until midnight before we had a draft we all thought sounded impressive, welcoming, and threatening enough. My sisters cleaned the dishes while we worked, and had excused themselves to bed hours before, mentioning where to find our rooms. Cassian and Azrael were to share one, Rhys and I the other. I frowned at the large guest bedroom as Rhys shut the door behind us. The bed was large enough for two, but I wasn't sharing it. I whirled to him. "I'm not..." Wood thumped on carpet, and a small bed appeared by the door. Rhys plopped onto it, tugging off his boots.
"Nesta is a delight, by the way."
"She's her own creature," I said. It was, perhaps, the kindest thing I could say about her.
"It's been a few centuries since someone got under Cassian's skin that easily. Too bad they're both inclined to kill the other."
Part of me shuddered at the havoc the two would wreak if they decided to stop fighting.
"And Elaine," Rhys said, sighing as he removed his other boot, "should not be marrying that lord's son. Not for about a dozen reasons, the least of which being the fact that you won't be invited to the wedding. Though maybe that's a good thing."
I hissed. "That's not funny."
"At least you won't have to send a gift either. I doubt her father-in-law would deign to accept it."
"You have a lot of nerve mocking my sisters when your own friends have equally as much melodrama." His brows lifted in silent question.
I snorted. "Oh, so you haven't noticed the way Azrael looks at Moore? Or how she sometimes watches him? Defends him?
And how both of them do such a good job letting Cassian be a buffer between them most of the time?" Rhys leveled a look at me.
"I'd suggest keeping those observations to yourself."
"You think I'm some busybody gossip? My life is miserable enough as it is. Why would I want to spread that misery to those around me as well?"
"Is it miserable? Your life, I mean?"
A careful question. "I don't know. Everything is happening so quickly that I don't know what to feel." It was more honest than I'd been in a while.
Perhaps once we return home, I should give you the day off."
"How considerate of you, my lord," he snorted, unbuttoning his jacket. I realized I stood in all my finery, with nothing to wear to sleep. A snap of Rhys's fingers and my night clothes and some flimsy underthings appeared on the bed.
"I couldn't decide which scrap of lace I wanted you to wear, so I brought you a few to choose from."
"Pig," I barked, snatching the clothes and heading to the adjoining bathing room. The room was toasty when I emerged, Rhys in the bed he'd summoned from wherever, all light gone save for the murmuring embers in the hearth. Even the sheets were warm as I slid between them.
"Thank you for warming the bed," I said into the dimness.
His back was to me, but I heard him clearly as he said,
"Amarantha never once thanked me for that."
Any warmth leached away. She didn't suffer enough. Not even close for what she had done. To me, to him, to Claire, to so many others. Rhys didn't answer. Instead, he said,
"I didn't think I could get through that dinner. What do you mean? He'd been rather calm, contained.
Your sisters mean well, or one of them does, but seeing them sitting at that table, I hadn't realized it would hit me as strongly. How young you were, how they didn't protect you.
I managed just fine.
We owe them our gratitude for letting us use this house, he said quietly. But it will be a long while yet before I can look at your sisters without wanting to roar at them.
A part of me feels the same way, I admitted, nestling down into the blankets. But if I hadn't gone into those woods, if they hadn't let me go out there alone, you would still be enslaved. And perhaps Amarantha would now be readying her forces to wipe out these lands. Silence. Then,
I am paying you a wage, you know, for all of this.
You don't need to.
Even if I had no money of my own. Every member of my court receives one. There's already a bank account in Valaris for you where your wages will be deposited. And you have a line of credit at most stores. So if you don't have enough when you're shopping, you can have the bill sent to the house.
Why? You don't have to do that. I swallowed hard. And how much, exactly, am I getting paid each month?
The same amount the others receive.
No doubt a generous, likely too generous, salary. But suddenly he asked,
when is your birthday?
Do I even need to count them anymore? He merely waited. I sighed. It's the winter solstice. He paused.
That was months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't... I don't remember seeing you celebrate it.
Through the bond, through my unshielded mess of a mind, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want a party when there was already all that celebrating going on. Birthdays seem meaningless now anyway. He was quiet for a long minute.
You were truly born on the winter solstice?
Is that so hard to believe? My mother claimed I was so withdrawn and strange because I was born on the longest night of the year. She tried one year to have my birthday on another day, but forgot to do it the next time. There was probably a more advantageous party she had to plan.
Now I know where Nesta gets it from. Honestly, it's a shame we can't stay longer. If only to see who will be left standing. Her or Cassian.
My money's on Nesta. A soft chuckle that snaked along my bones. A reminder that he'd once bet on me. Had once been the only one under the mountain who had put money on me defeating the Midengard worm. He said,
so's mine.
Chapter 25. Standing beneath the latticework of snow-heavy trees, I took in the slumbering forest and wondered if the birds had gone quiet because of my presence, or that of the High Lord beside me.
Freezing my ass off first thing in the morning isn't how I intended to spend our day off,
Rhysand said, frowning at the wood.
I should take you to the Illyrian steppes when we return. The forest there is far more interesting and warmer.
I have no idea where those are. Snow crunched under the boots Rhys had summoned when I declared I wanted to train with him. And not physically, but with the powers I had, whatever they were. You showed me a blank map that one time, remember?
Precautions.
Am I ever going to see a proper one, or will I be left to guess about where everything is?
You're in a lovely mood today,
Rhys said, and lifted a hand in the air between us. A folded map appeared, which he took his sweet time opening.
Lest you think I don't trust you, Feyre, darling.
He pointed to just south of the Northern Isles.
These are the steps. 4 days that way on foot.
He dragged a finger upward and into the mountains along the Isles.
We'll take you into Illyrian territory.
I took in the map, noted the peninsula jutting out about halfway up the western coast of the Night Court, and the name marked there. Valaris. He'd once shown me a blank one, when I had belonged to Tamlin and been little more than a spy and prisoner, because he'd known I'd tell Tamlin about the cities, their locations, that Ianthe might learn about it too. I pushed back against that weight in my chest, my gut.
Here,
Rhys said, pocketing the map and gesturing to the forest around us.
We'll train here. We're far enough now.
Far enough from the house, from anyone else, to avoid detection or casualties. Rhys held out a hand, and a thick, stumpy candle appeared in his palm. He set it on the snowy ground.
Light it, douse it with water, and dry the wick.
I knew he meant without my hands. I can't do a single one of those things, I said. What about physical shielding?
At least I'd been able to do some of that.
That's for another time. Today, I suggest you start trying some other facet of your power. What about shapeshifting?
I glared at him. Fire, water, and air it is. Bastard, insufferable bastard. He didn't push the matter, thankfully. Didn't ask why shapeshifting might be the one power I'd never bother to pull apart and master. Perhaps for the same reason I didn't particularly want to ask about one key piece of his history. Didn't want to know if Azrael and Cassian had helped when the Spring Court's ruling family had been killed. I looked Rhys over from head to toe. The Illyrian warrior garb, the sword over his shoulder, the wings, and that general sense of overwhelming power that always radiated from him.
Maybe you should go. Why? You seemed so insistent that I train you.
I can't concentrate with you around, I admitted. And go far. I can feel you from a room away. A suggestive curve shaped his lips.
I rolled my eyes.
Why don't you just hide in one of those pocket realms for a bit?
It doesn't work like that. There's no air there.
I gave him a look to say he should definitely do it then, and he laughed.
Fine, practice all you want in privacy.
He jerked his chin at my tattoo.
Give a shout down the bond if you get anything accomplished before breakfast.
I frowned at the eye in my palm.
What? Literally shout at the tattoo?
You could try rubbing it on certain body parts and I might come faster.
He vanished into nothing before I could hurl the candle at him. Alone in the frost-gilded forest, I replayed his words and a quiet chuckle rasped out of me. I wondered if I should have tested out the bow and arrows I'd been given before asking him to leave. I hadn't yet tried out the Illyrian bow. Hadn't shot anything in months, actually. I stared at the candle. Nothing happened. An hour passed. I thought of everything that enraged me, sickened me, thought of Ianthe and her entitlement, her demands. Not even a wisp of smoke emerged. When my eyes were on the verge of bleeding, I took a break to scrounge through the pack I'd brought. I found fresh bread, a magically warmed canister of stew, and a note from Rhysand that said,
I'm bored. Any sparks yet?
Not surprisingly, a pen clattered in the bottom of the bag. I grabbed the pen and scribbled my response atop the canister before watching the letter vanish right out of my palm. No use, Noop. Don't you have important things to do? The letter flitted back a moment later. I'm watching Cassian and Nesta get into it again over their tea, something you subjected me to when you kicked me off training. I thought this was our day off. I snorted and wrote back, Poor baby, High Lord, life is so hard. Paper vanished, then reappeared, his scribble now near the top of the paper, the only bit of clear space left.
Life is better when you're around,
and look how lovely your handwriting is. I could almost feel him waiting on the other side, in the sunny breakfast room, half paying attention to my eldest sister and the Illyrian warriors sparring. A faint smile curved my lips. You're a shameless flirt, I wrote back. The page vanished. I watched my open palm, waiting for it to return. And I was so focused on it that I didn't notice anyone was behind me until the hand covered my mouth and yanked me clean off my feet. I thrashed, biting and clawing, shrieking as whoever it was hauled me up. I tried to shove away, snow churning around us like dust on a road, but the arms that gripped me were immovable, like bands of iron and... A rasping voice sounded in my ear. Stop, or I snap your neck. I knew that voice. It prowled through my nightmares. The Atter. Chapter 26. The Atter had vanished in the moments after Amarantha died, suspected to have fled for the King of Highburn. And if it was here, in the mortal lands? I went pliant in its arms, buying a wisp of time to scan for something, anything to use against it. Good, it hissed in my ear. Now, tell me. Night exploded around us. The Atter screamed, as that darkness swallowed us, and I was wrenched from its spindly, hard arms, its nails slicing into my leather. I collided face first with packed, icy snow. I rolled, flipping back, whirling to get my feet under me. The light returned as I rose into a crouch, knife angled. And there was Rhysand, binding the Atter to a snow-shrouded oak with nothing but twisting bands of night, like the ones that had crushed Ianthe's hand. Rhysand's own hands were in his pockets, his face cold and beautiful as death. I'd been wondering where you slithered off to. The Atter panted as it struggled against the bonds. Rhysand merely sent two spears of night shooting into its wings. The Atter shrieked as those spears met flesh and sank deep into the bark behind it. Answer my questions and you can crawl back to your master, Rhys said, as if he were inquiring about the weather. Whore, the Atter spat. Silvery blood leaked from its wings, hissing as it hit the snow. Rhys smiled. You forget that I rather enjoy these things. He lifted a finger. The Atter screamed, No! Rhys's finger paused. I was sent, it panted, to get her. My blood went as cold as the woods around us. Why? Rhys asked with that casual, terrifying calm. That was my order. I am not to question the king wants her. Why? Rhys said again. The Atter began screaming, this time beneath the force of a power I could not see. I flinched. Don't know, don't know, don't know. I believed it. Where is the king currently? Highburn. Army? Coming soon. How large? Endless. We have allies in every territory, all waiting. Rhys cocked his head as if contemplating what to ask next. But he straightened, and Azriel slammed into the snow, sending it flying like water from a puddle. He'd flown in so silently, I hadn't even heard the beat of his wings. Cassian must have stayed at the house to defend my sisters. There was no kindness on Azriel's face as the snow settled. The immovable mask of the High Lord's Shadow Singer. The adder began trembling, and I almost felt bad for it as Azriel stalked him. Almost, but didn't. Not when these woods were so close to the chateau, to my sisters. Rhys came to my side as Azriel reached the adder. The next time you try to take her, Rhys said to the adder, I kill first, ask questions later. Azriel caught his eye. Rhys nodded. The siphons atop his scarred hands flickered like rippling blue fire as he reached for the adder. Before the adder could scream, it and the spymaster vanished. I didn't want to think about where they'd go, what Azriel would do. I hadn't even known Azriel possessed the ability to winnow, or whatever power he'd channeled through his siphons. He'd let Rhys winnow us both in the other day, unless the power was too draining to be used so lightly. Will he kill him? I said, my puffs of breath uneven.
No.
I shivered at the raw power glazing his taut body. We'll use him to send a message to Highburn that if they want to hunt the members of my court, they'll have to do better than that. I started, at the claim he'd made of me, and at the words. You knew he was hunting me?
I was curious who wanted to snatch you the first moment you were alone.
I didn't know where to start. So Tamlin was right about my safety, to some degree. It didn't excuse anything. So you never planned to stay with me while I trained. You used me as bait.
Yes, and I'd do it again. You were safe the entire time.
You should have told me. Maybe next time. There will be no next time. I slammed a hand into his chest, and he staggered back a step from the strength of the blow. I blinked.
I'd forgotten. Forgotten that strength in my panic. Just like with the Weaver, I'd forgotten how strong I was.
Yes, you did, Rhysand snarled, reading the surprise on my face, that icy calm shattering. You forgot that strength, and that you can burn and become darkness and grow claws. You forgot! You stopped fighting.
He didn't just mean the adder or the Weaver. And the rage rose up in me in such a mighty wave that I had no thought in my head but wrath. At myself, what I'd been forced to do, what had been done to me, to him.
So what if I did? I hissed and shoved him again. So what if I did?
I went to shove him again, but Rhys winnowed away a few feet.
I stormed for him, snow crunching underfoot.
It's not easy.
The rage ran over me, obliterated me. I lifted my arms to slam my palms into his chest, and he vanished again. He appeared behind me, so close that his breath tickled my ear as he said,
You have no idea how not easy it is.
I whirled, grappling for him. He vanished before I could strike him, pound him. Rhys appeared across the clearing, chuckling.
Try harder.
I couldn't fold myself into darkness and pockets, and if I could turn myself into smoke, into air and night and stars, I'd use it to appear right in front of him and smack that smile off his face. I moved. Even if it was futile, even as he rippled into darkness, and I hated him for it.
for the wings and ability to move like mist on the wind. He appeared a step away, and I pounced, hands out, talons out, and slammed into a tree. He laughed as I bounced back, teeth singing, talons barking as they shredded through wood. But I was already lunging as he vanished, lunging like I could disappear into the folds of the world as well, track him across eternity. And so I did. Time slowed and curled, and I could see the darkness of him turn to smoke and veer, as if it were running for another spot in the clearing. I hurtled for that spot, even as I felt my own lightness, folding my very self into wind and shadow and dust, the looseness of it radiating out of me, all while I aimed for where he was headed. Rhysand appeared, a solid figure in my world of smoke and stars. And his eyes were wide, his mouth split in a grin of wicked delight as I winnowed in front of him and tackled him into the snow. Chapter 27. I panted, sprawled on top of Rhys in the snow while he laughed hoarsely. "Don't," I snarled into his face, "ever." I pushed his rock-hard shoulders, talons curving at my fingertips. "Use me as bait again." He stopped laughing. I pushed harder, those nails digging in through his leather. "You said I could be a weapon. Teach me to become one. Don't use me like a pawn. And if being one is part of my work for you, then I'm done. Done." Despite the snow, his body was warm beneath me, and I wasn't sure I'd realized just how much bigger he was until our bodies were flush. Too close. Much, much too close. Rhys cocked his head, loosening a chunk of snow clinging to his hair. "Fair enough." I shoved off him, snow crunching as I backed away. My talons were gone. He hoisted himself up onto his elbows. "Do it again. Show me how you did it." "No." The candle he'd brought now lay in pieces, half buried under the snow. "I want to go back to the chateau." I was cold and tired, and he'd... His face turned grave. "I'm sorry." I wondered how often he said those two words. I didn't care. I waited while he uncoiled to his feet, brushing the snow off him, and held out a hand. It wasn't just an offer. "You forgot," he'd said. I had. "Why does the King of Highburn want me? Because he knows I can nullify the cauldron's powers with the book?" Darkness flickered, the only sign of the temper Rhysand had once again leashed.
"That's what I'm going to find out."
"You stopped fighting."
"I'm sorry," he repeated, hand still outstretched. "Let's eat breakfast, then go home."
"Valaris isn't my home." I could have sworn hurt flashed in his eyes before he spirited us back to my family's house. Chapter 28. My sisters ate breakfast with Rhys and me, Azrael gone to wherever he'd taken the Atter. Cassian had flown off to join him the moment we returned. He'd given Nesta a mocking bow, and she'd given him a vulgar gesture I hadn't realized she knew how to make. Cassian had merely laughed, his eyes snaking over Nesta's ice-blue gown with a predatory intent that, given her hiss of rage, he knew would set her spitting. Then he was gone, leaving my sister on the broad doorstep, her brown gold hair ruffled by the chill wind stirred by his mighty wings. We brought my sisters to the village to mail our letter, Reese glamoring us so we were invisible while they went into the little shop to post them. After we returned home, our goodbyes were quick. I knew Reese wanted to return to Valaris, if only to learn what the Adder was up to. I'd said as much to Reese while he flew us through the wall, into the warmth of Prithian, then winnowed us to Valaris. Morning mist still twined through the city and the mountains around it. The chill also remained, but not nearly as unforgiving as the cold of the mortal world. Reese left me in the foyer, huffing hot air into my frozen palms, without so much as a goodbye. Hungry again, I found Nuala and Caradwen, and I gobbled down cheese and chive scones while thinking through what I'd seen, what I'd done. Not an hour later, Reese found me in the living room, my feet propped on the couch before the fire, a book in my lap, a cup of rose tea steaming on the low table before me. I stood as he entered, scanning him for any sign of injury. Something tight in my chest eased when I found nothing amiss. "It's done," he said, dragging a hand through his blue-black hair. "We learned what we needed to." I braced myself to be shut out, to be told it'd be taken care of, but Reese added, "It's up to you, Feyre, to decide how much of our methods you want to know about, what you can handle. What we did to the Adder wasn't pretty." "I want to know everything," I said. "Take me there." "The Adder isn't in Valaris. He was in the Hewn City, in the Court of Nightmares, where it took Azrael less than an hour to break him." I waited for more, and as if deciding I wasn't about to crumple, Reese stalked closer, until less than a foot of the ornate red carpet lay between us. His boots, usually impeccably polished, that was silver blood speckled on them. Only when I met his gaze did he say, "I'll show you." I knew what he meant and steadied myself, blocking out the murmuring fire and the boots and the lingering cold around my heart. Immediately, I was in that antechamber of his mind, a pocket of memory he'd carved for me. Darkness flowed through me, soft and seductive, echoing up from an abyss of power so great it had no end and no beginning.
"Tell me how you tracked her," Azrael said in the quiet voice that had broken countless enemies.
I, Reese, leaned against the far wall of the holding cell, arms crossed. Azrael crouched before where the Adder was chained to a chair in the center of the room. A few levels above, the Court of Nightmares reveled on, unaware their High Lord had come. I'd have to pay them a visit soon, remind them who held their leash.
Soon, but not today.
Not when Feyre had winnowed.
And she was still pissed as hell at me. Rightly so, if I was being honest. But Azrael had learned that a small enemy force had infiltrated the North 2 days ago, and my suspicions were confirmed. Either to get at Tamlin or at me, they wanted her. Maybe for their own experimenting. The Adder let out a low laugh.
"I received word from the king that's where you were. I don't know how he knew. I got the order, flew to the wall as fast as I could."
Azrael's knife was out, balanced on a knee. Truth teller, the name stamped in silver Illyrian runes on the scabbard. He'd already learned that the Adder and a few others had been stationed on the outskirts of the Illyrian territory.
I was half tempted to dump the Atar in one of the war camps and see what the Illyrians did to it. The Atar's eyes shifted toward me, glowing with a hatred I'd become well accustomed to.
Good luck trying to keep her, High Lord.
Azrael said.
Why?
People often made the mistake of assuming Cassian was the wilder one, the one who couldn't be tamed. But Cassian was all hot temper, temper that could be used to forge and weld. There was an icy rage in Azrael I had never been able to thaw. In the centuries I'd known him, he'd said little about his life, those years in his father's keep, locked in darkness. Perhaps the Shadow Singer gift had come to him then. Perhaps he'd taught himself the language of shadow and wind and stone. His half-brothers hadn't been forthcoming either. I knew because I'd met them, asked them, and had shattered their legs when they'd spat on Azrael instead. They'd walked again, eventually. The Atar said,
Do you think it is not common knowledge that you took her from Tamlin?
I knew that already. That had been Azrael's task these days, monitor the situation with the Spring Court and prepare for our own attack on Highburn. But Tamlin had shut down his borders, sealed them so tightly that even flying overhead at night was impossible, and any ears and eyes Azrael had once possessed in the court had gone deaf and blind.
The king could help you keep her. Consider sparing you if you worked with him.
As the Atar spoke, I rummaged through its mind, each thought more vile and hideous than the next. I didn't even know I'd slipped inside, but there, images of the army that had been built, the twin to the one I'd fought against 5 centuries ago, of Highburn's shores full of ships, readying for an assault, of the king, lounging on his throne in his crumbling castle. No sign of Jurian stalking about, or the cauldron. Not a whisper of the book being on their minds. Everything the Atar had confessed was true, and it had no more value. Az looked over his shoulder. The Atar had given him everything. Now it was just babbling to buy time. I pushed off the wall. Break its legs, shred its wings, and dump it off the coast of Highburn. See if it survives. The Atar began thrashing, begging. I paused by the door and said to it, I remember every moment of it. Be grateful I'm letting you live, for now. I hadn't let myself see the memories from under the mountain, of me, of the others, of what it had done to that human girl I'd given Amarantha in Feyre's place. I didn't let myself see what it had been like to beat Feyre, to torment and torture her. I might have splattered him on the walls, and I needed him to send a message more than I needed my own vengeance. The Atar was already screaming beneath Truth Teller's honed edge when I left the cell.
Then it was done. I staggered back, spooling myself into my body. Tamlin had closed his borders.
What situation with the Spring Court?
None, as of right now. But you know how far Tamlin can be driven to protect what he thinks is his.
The image of paint sliding down the ruined study wall flashed in my mind.
I should have sent more that day, Rhys said with quiet menace.
I snapped up my mental shields. I didn't want to talk about it. Thank you for telling me, I said, and took my book and tea up to my room.
Feyre, he said. I didn't stop. I am sorry about deceiving you earlier.
And this, letting me into his mind, a peace offering. I need to write a letter. The letter was quick, simple, but each word was a battle. Not because of my former illiteracy. No, I could now read and write just fine. It was because of the message that Reese, standing in the foyer, now read. I left of my own free will. I am cared for and safe. I am grateful for all that you did for me, all that you gave me. Please don't come looking for me. I'm not coming back. He swiftly folded it in two, and it vanished.
Are you sure?
Perhaps it would help with whatever situation was going on at the Spring Court. I glanced to the windows beyond him. The mist wreathing the city had wandered off, revealing a bright, cloudless sky. And somehow, my head felt clearer than it had in days, months. A city lay out there that I had barely observed or cared about. I wanted it. Life. People. I wanted to see it, feel its rush through my blood, no boundaries, no limits to what I might encounter or do. I am no one's pet, I said. Reese's face was contemplative, and I wondered if he remembered that he'd told me the same thing once, when I was too lost in my own guilt and despair to understand. What next?
For what it's worth, I did actually want to give you a day of rest.
Don't coddle me.
I'm not. And I'd hardly call our encounter this morning rest. But you will forgive me if I make assessments based on your current physical condition.
I'll be the person who decides. What about the Book of Breathings?
Once Azrael returns from dealing with the Adder, he's to put his other skill set to use and infiltrate the Mortal Queen's courts to learn where they're keeping it and what their plans might be. And as for the half in Prithian, we'll go to the summer court within a few days if my request to visit is approved. High Lords visiting other courts makes everyone jumpy. We'll deal with the book then.
He shut his mouth, no doubt waiting for me to trudge upstairs to brood and sleep. Enough. I'd had enough of sleeping. I said, "You told me that this city was better seen at night. Are you all talk, or will you ever bother to show me?" A low laugh as he looked me over. I didn't recoil from his gaze. When his eyes found mine again, his mouth twisted in a smile so few saw. Real amusement. Perhaps a bit of happiness edged with relief. The male behind the High Lord's mask. "Dinner," he said. "Tonight. Let's find out if you, Feyre darling, are all talk. Or if you'll allow a Lord of Night to take you out on the town."
Amryn came to my room before dinner. Apparently, we were all going out tonight. Downstairs, Cassian and Moore were sniping at each other about whether Cassian could fly faster short distance than Moore could winnow to the same spot. I assumed Azrael was nearby, seeking sanctuary in the shadows. Hopefully he'd gotten some rest after dealing with the Adder, and would rest a bit more before heading into the mortal realm to spy on those queens. Amryn at least knocked this time before entering. Nuala and Caradwen, who had finished setting combs of mother-of-pearl into my hair, took one look at the delicate female and vanished into puffs of smoke. "Skittish things," Amryn said, her red lips cutting a cruel line. "Wraiths always are." "Wraiths?" I twisted in the seat before the vanity. "I thought they were high fae." "Half," Amryn said,
surveying my turquoise, cobalt, and white clothes. Wraiths are nothing but shadow and mist, able to walk through walls, stone, you name it. I don't even want to know how those two were conceived. High Fae will stick their cocks anywhere.
I choked on what could have been a laugh or a cough. They make good spies.
Why do you think they're now whispering in Azrael's ear that I'm in here?
I thought they answered to Rhys.
They answered to both, but they were trained by Azrael first.
Are they spying on me?
No.
She frowned at a loose thread in her rain cloud-colored shirt. Her chin-length dark hair swayed as she lifted her head.
Rhys has told them time and again not to, but I don't think Azrael will ever trust me fully. So they're reporting on my movements, and with good reason.
Why?
Why not? I'd be disappointed if Rhysand's spymaster didn't keep tabs on me, even go against orders to do so.
Rhys doesn't punish him for disobeying.
Those silver eyes glowed.
The Court of Dreams is founded on three things: to defend, to honor, and to cherish. Were you expecting brute strength and obedience? Many of Rhysand's top officials have little to no power. He values loyalty, cunning, compassion. And Azrael, despite his disobedience, is acting to defend his court, his people. So no, Rhysand does not punish that. There are rules, but they're flexible.
What about the tithe?
What tithe?
I stood from the little bench. The tithe, taxes, whatever, twice a year.
There are taxes on city dwellers, but there is no tithe.
She clicked her tongue.
But the High Lord of Spring enacts one.
I didn't want to think about it entirely, not yet. Not with that letter now on its way to him, if not already delivered. So I reached for the small box on the vanity and pulled out her amulet. Here. I handed over the gold and jewel-encrusted thing. Thank you. Amryn's brows rose as I dropped it into her waiting palm.
You gave it back.
I didn't realize it was a test.
She set it back into the case. Keep it. There's no magic to it.
I blinked. You lied? She shrugged, heading for the door.
I found it at the bottom of my jewelry box. You needed something to believe you could get out of the prison again.
But Rhys kept looking at it because he gave it to me 200 years ago.
He was probably surprised to see it again and wondered why I'd given it to you. Likely worried why I might have given it to you.
I clenched my teeth, but Amryn was already breezing through the door with a cheerful,
"You're welcome."
Chapter 29. Despite the chill night, every shop was open as we walked through the city. Musicians played in little squares, and the Palace of Thread and Jewels was packed with shoppers and performers, high fae and lesser fairies alike. But we continued past, down to the river itself, the water so smooth that the stars and lights blended on its dark surface like a living ribbon of eternity. The five of them were unhurried as we strolled across one of the wide marble bridges spanning the Sidra, often moving forward or dropping back to chat with one another. From the ornate lanterns that lined either side of the bridge, fae light cast golden shadows on the wings of the three males, gilding the talons at the apex of each. The conversation ranged from the people they knew, matches and teams for sports I'd never heard of. Apparently, Amryn was a vicious, obsessive supporter of one. New shops,
music they'd heard, clubs they favored. Not a mention of Highburn or the threats we faced. No doubt from secrecy. But I had a feeling it was also because tonight, this time together, they did not want that terrible, hideous presence intruding. As if they were all just ordinary citizens, even Reese. As if they weren't the most powerful people in this court, maybe in all of Prithian. And no one, absolutely no one on the street balked or paled or ran. Awed, perhaps a little intimidated, but no fear. It was so unusual that I kept silent, merely observing them, their world, the normalcy that they each fought so hard to preserve, that I had once raged against, resented. But there was no place like this in the world, not so serene, so loved by its people and its rulers. The other side of the city was even more crowded, with patrons in finery out to attend the many theaters we passed. I'd never seen a theater before, never seen a play or a concert or a symphony. In our ramshackle village, we'd gotten mummers and minstrels at best, herds of beggars yowling on makeshift instruments at worst. We strolled along the riverside walkway, past shops and cafes, music spilling from them. And I thought, even as I hung back from the others, my gloved hands stuffed into the pockets of my heavy blue overcoat, that the sounds of it all might have been the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. The people and the river and the music. The clank of silverware on plates. The scrape of chairs being pulled out and pushed in. The shouts of vendors selling their wares as they ambled past. How much had I missed in these months of despair and numbness? But no longer. The lifeblood of Valaris thrummed through me, and in rare moments of quiet, I could have sworn I heard the clash of the sea clawing at the distant cliffs. Eventually, we entered a small restaurant beside the river, built into the lower level of a two-story building, the whole space bedecked in greens and golds and barely big enough to fit all of us, and three sets of Illyrian wings. But the owner knew them and kissed them each on the cheek, even Rhysand. Well, except for Amren, whom the owner bowed to before she hustled back into her kitchen and bade us sit at the large table that was half in, half out of the open storefront. The starry night was crisp, the wind rustling the potted palms placed with loving care along the riverside walkway railing. No doubt spelled to keep from dying in the winter, just as the warmth of the restaurant kept the chill from disturbing us or any of those dining in the open air at the river's edge. Then the food platters began pouring out, along with the wine and the conversation, and we dined under the stars beside the river. I'd never had such food, warm and rich and savory and spicy, like it filled not only my stomach, but that lingering hole in my chest, too. The owner, a slim, dark-skinned female with lovely brown eyes, was standing behind my chair, chatting with Reese about the latest shipment of spices that had come to the palaces. The traders were saying the prices might rise, High Lord, especially if rumors about Highburn Awakening are correct. Down the table, I felt the others' attention slide to us, even as they kept talking. Reese leaned back in his seat, swirling his goblet of wine.
We'll find a way to keep the prices from skyrocketing.
Don't trouble yourself, of course, the owner said, wringing her fingers a bit. It's just so lovely to have such spices available again now that things are better.
Reese gave her a gentle smile, the one that made him seem younger.
I wouldn't be troubling myself, not when I like your cooking so much.
The owner beamed, flushing,
and looked to where I'd half twisted in my seat to watch her.
Is it to your liking?
The happiness on her face, the satisfaction that only a day of hard work doing something you love could bring, hit me like a stone. I remembered feeling that way. After painting from morning until night. Once, that was all I had wanted for myself. I looked to the dishes, then back at her, and said, I've lived in the mortal realm and lived in other courts, but I've never had food like this. Food that makes me feel awake. It sounded about as stupid as it felt coming out, but I couldn't think of another way to say it. But the owner nodded like she understood and squeezed my shoulder. Then I'll bring you a special dessert, she said, and strode into her kitchen. I turned back to my plate, but found Rhysand's eyes on me. His face was softer, more contemplative than I'd ever seen it, his mouth slightly open. I lifted my brows.
What?
He gave me a cocky grin and leaned in to hear the story Moor was telling about. I forgot what she was talking about as the owner emerged with a large metal goblet full of dark liquid and placed it before Amran. Rhys's second hadn't touched her plate, but pushed the food around like she might actually be trying to be polite. When she saw the goblet laid before her, she flicked her brows up. You didn't have to do that. The owner shrugged her slim shoulders.
It's fresh and hot, and we needed the beast for tomorrow's roast anyway.
I had a horrible feeling I knew what was inside. Amran swirled the goblet, the dark liquid lapping at the sides like wine, then sipped from it.
You spiced it nicely.
Blood gleamed on her teeth. The owner bowed. No one leaves my place hungry, she said before walking away. Indeed, I almost asked Moore to roll me out of the restaurant by the time we were done and Rhys had paid the tab, despite the owner's protests. My muscles were barking thanks to my earlier training in the mortal forest, and at some point during the meal, every part of me I'd used while tackling Rhys into the snow had started to ache. Moore rubbed her stomach in lazy circles as we paused beside the river.
I want to go dancing. I won't be able to fall asleep when I'm this full. Rita's is right up the street.
Dancing. My body groaned in protest, and I glanced about for an ally to shoot down this ridiculous idea. But Azriel said, his eyes wholly on Moore.
I'm in.
Of course you are, Cassian grumbled, frowning at him. Don't you have to be off at dawn? Moore's frown now mirrored Cassian's, as if she realized where and what he'd be doing tomorrow. She said to Azriel,
We don't have to.
I want to,
Azriel said, holding her gaze long enough that Moore dropped it, twisted toward Cassian, and said,
Will you deign to join us, or do you have plans to ogle your muscles in the mirror?
Cassian snorted, looping his elbow through hers and leading her up the street.
I'll go. For the drinks, you ass, no dancing.
Thank the mother, you nearly shattered my foot the last time you tried.
It was an effort not to stare at Azriel as he watched them head up the steep street, arm in arm and bickering with every step. The shadows gathered around his shoulders like they were indeed whispering to him, shielding him, perhaps. His broad chest expanded with a deep breath that sent them skittering, and then he set into an easy, graceful stroll after them. If Azriel was going with them, then any excuse I might make not to... I turned pleading eyes to Amran, but she'd vanished.
She's getting more blood in the back to take home with her, Rhys said in my ear, and I nearly jumped out of my skin.
His chuckle was warm against my neck.
And then she'll be going right to her apartment to gorge herself.
I tried not to shudder as I faced him.
Why blood? It doesn't seem polite to ask.
I frowned up at him.
Are you going dancing?
He peered over my shoulder at his friends, who had almost scaled the steep street, some people pausing to greet them.
I'd rather walk home, Reese said at last. It's been a long day.
Moore turned back at the top of the hill, her purple clothes floating around her in the winter wind, and raised a dark gold brow. Reese shook his head, and she waved, followed by short waves from Azrael and Cassian, who'd dropped back to talk with his brother-in-arms. Reese gestured forward.
Shall we? Or are you too cold?
Consuming blood with Amryn in the back of the restaurant sounded more appealing, but I shook my head and fell into step beside him as we walked along the river toward the bridge. I drank in the city as greedily as Amryn had gobbled down the spiced blood, and I almost stumbled as I spied the glimmer of color across the water. The rainbow of Valaris glowed like a fistful of jewels, as if the paint they used on their houses came alive in the moonlight.
This is my favorite view in the city, Rhys said,
stopping at the metal railing along the river walkway and gazing toward the artist's quarter.
It was my sister's favorite, too. My father used to have to drag her kicking and screaming out of Valaris, she loved it so much.
I fumbled for the right response to the quiet sorrow in those words. But, like a useless fool, I merely asked, "Then why are both your houses on the other side of the river?" I leaned against the railing, watching the reflections of the rainbow wobble on the river surface like bright fishes struggling in the current.
Because I wanted a quiet street, so I could visit this clamor whenever I wished and then have a home to retreat to.
You could have just reordered the city.
Why the hell would I change one thing about this place?
Isn't that what High Lords do? My breath clouded in front of me in the brisk night. Whatever they please? He studied my face.
There are a great many things that I wish to do and don't get to.
I hadn't realized how close we were standing. So when you buy jewelry for Amryn, is it to keep yourself in her good graces or because you're together?
Rhys barked a laugh. When I was young and stupid, I once invited her to my bed. She laughed herself hoarse. The jewelry is just because I enjoy buying it for a friend who works hard for me and has my back when I need it. Staying in her good graces is an added bonus.
None of it surprised me. And you didn't marry anyone?
So many questions tonight.
I stared at him until he sighed.
I've had lovers, but I never felt tempted to invite one of them to share a life with me. And I honestly think that if I'd asked, they all would have said no.
I would have thought they'd be fighting each other to win your hand.
Like Ianthe. Marrying me means life with a target on your back. And if there were offspring, then a life of knowing they'd be hunted from the moment they were conceived. Everyone knows what happened to my family. And my people know that beyond our borders, we are hated.
I still didn't know the full story, but I asked, why? Why are you hated? Why keep the truth of this place secret? It's a shame no one knows about it. What good you do here?
There was a time when the Night Court was a court of nightmares and was ruled from the Hewn City. Long ago. But an ancient High Lord had a different vision, and rather than allowing the world to see his territory vulnerable at a time of change, he sealed the borders and staged a coup.
eliminating the worst of the courtiers and predators, building Valaris for the dreamers, establishing trade and peace.
His eyes blazed, as if he could peer all the way back in time to see it. With those remarkable gifts of his, it wouldn't surprise me.
To preserve it, Rhys continued, he kept it a secret, and so did his offspring and their offspring. There are many spells on the city itself, laid by him and his heirs, that make those who trade here unable to spill our secrets, and grant them adept skills at lying in order to keep the origin of their goods, their ships, hidden from the rest of the world. Rumor has it that ancient High Lord cast his very life's blood upon the stones and river to keep that spell eternal. But along the way, despite his best intentions, darkness grew again. Not as bad as it had once been, but bad enough that there is a permanent divide within my court. We allow the world to see the other half, to fear them, so that they might never guess this place thrives here. And we allow the Court of Nightmares to continue, blind to Valaris's existence because we know that without them, there are some courts and kingdoms that might strike us, and invade our borders to discover the many, many secrets we've kept from the other High Lords and courts these millennia.
So truly none of the others know, in the other courts?
Not a soul. You will not find it on a single map or mentioned in any book beyond those written here. Perhaps it is our loss to be so contained and isolated, but...
He gestured to the city around us.
My people do not seem to be suffering much for it.
Indeed, they did not. Thanks to Rhys and his inner circle. Are you worried about Az going to the mortal lands tomorrow? He tapped a finger against the rail.
Of course I am. But Azrael has infiltrated places far more harrowing than a few mortal courts. He'd find my worrying insulting.
Does he mind what he does? Not the spying, I mean. What he did to the Adder today. Rhys loosed a breath.
It's hard to tell with him. And he'd never tell me. I've witnessed Cassian rip apart opponents and then puke his guts up once the carnage stopped. Sometimes even mourn them. But Azrael. Cassian tries. I try. But I think the only person who ever gets him to admit any sort of feeling is Moore. And that's only when she's pestered him to the point where even his infinite patience has run out.
I smiled a bit. But he and Moore, they never...
That's between them and Cassian. I'm not stupid or arrogant enough to get in the middle of it.
Which I would certainly be if I shoved my nose in their business. We walked in silence across the packed bridge to the other side of the river. My muscles quivered at the steep hills between us and the townhouse. I was about to beg Rhys to fly me home when I caught the strands of music pouring from a group of performers outside a restaurant. My hands slackened at my sides. A reduced version of the symphony I'd heard in a chill dungeon, when I had been so lost to terror and despair that I had hallucinated. Hallucinated as this music poured into my cell and kept me from shattering. And once more, the beauty of it hit me. The layering and swaying, the joy and peace. They had never played a piece like it under the mountain, never this sort of music. And I'd never heard music in my cell save for that one time. You, I breathed, not taking my eyes from the musicians playing so skillfully that even the diners had set down their forks in the cafes nearby. You sent that music into my cell. Why? Rhysand's voice was hoarse.
Because you were breaking. And I couldn't find another way to save you.
The music swelled and built. I'd seen a palace in the sky when I'd hallucinated. A place between sunset and dawn. A house of moonstone pillars. I saw the night court. He glanced sidelong at me.
I didn't send those images to you. I didn't care.
Thank you. For everything. For what you did. Then and now.
Even after the Weaver? After this morning with my trap for the adder? My nostrils flared.
You ruin everything. Rhys grinned, and I didn't notice if people were staring as he slid an arm under my leg and shot us both into the sky.
I could learn to love it, I realized. The flying.
I was reading in bed, listening to the merry chatter of the toasty birch fire across the room light when I turned the page of my book and a piece of paper fell out. I took one look at the cream stationery and the handwriting and sat up straight. On it, Rhysand had written,
I might be a shameless flirt, but at least I don't have a horrible temper. You should come tend to my wounds from our squabble in the snow. I'm bruised all over, thanks to you.
Something clicked against the nightstand, and a pen rolled across the polished mahogany. Hissing, I snatched it up and scribbled, Go lick your wounds and leave me be. The paper vanished. It was gone for a while, far longer than it should have taken to write the few words that appeared on the paper when it returned.
I'd much rather you licked my wounds for me.
My heart pounded, faster and faster, and a strange sort of rush went through my veins as I read the sentence again and again. A challenge. I clamped my lips shut to keep from smiling as I wrote, Lick you where, exactly? The paper vanished before I'd even completed the final mark. His reply was a long time coming. Then,
Wherever you want to lick me, Feyre. I'd like to start with everywhere, but I can choose if necessary.
I wrote back, Let's hope my licking is better than yours. I remember how horrible you were at it under the mountain.
Lie. He'd licked away my tears when I'd been a moment away from shattering.
He'd done it to keep me distracted, keep me angry, because anger was better than feeling nothing, because anger and hatred were the long-lasting fuel in the endless dark of my despair, the same way that music had kept me from breaking. Lucian had come to patch me up a few times, but no one risked quite so much in keeping me not only alive, but as mentally intact as I could be, considering the circumstances. Just as he'd been doing these past few weeks, taunting and teasing me to keep the hollowness at bay. Just as he was doing now.
I was under duress, his next note read. If you want, I'd be more than happy to prove you wrong. I've been told I'm very, very good at licking.
I clenched my knees together and wrote back, Good night. A heartbeat later, his note said,
Try not to moan too loudly when you dream about me. I need my beauty rest.
I got up, chucked the letter in the burbling fire, and gave it a vulgar gesture. I could have sworn laughter rumbled down the hall. I didn't dream about Rhys. I dreamed about the adder, its claws on me, gripping me as I was punched. I dreamed about its hissing laughter and foul stench. But I slept through the night and did not wake once.
Chapter 30.
Cassian might have been cocky grins and vulgarity most of the time, but in the sparring ring in a rock-carved courtyard atop the House of Wind the next afternoon, he was a stone-cold killer. And when those lethal instincts were turned on me, beneath the fighting leathers, even with the brisk temperature, my skin was slick with sweat. Each breath ravaged my throat, and my arms trembled so badly that any time I so much as tried to use my fingers, my pinky would start shaking uncontrollably. I was watching it wobble of its own accord when Cassian closed the gap between us, gripped my hand, and said,
"This is because you're hitting on the wrong knuckles. Top two, pointer and middle finger, that's where the punches should connect. Hitting here," he said, tapping a calloused finger on the already bruised bit of skin in the V between my pinky and ring finger, "will do more damage to you than to your opponent. You're lucky the Adder didn't want to get into a fist fight."
We'd been going at it for an hour now, walking through the basic steps of hand-to-hand combat. And it turned out that I might have been good at hunting, at archery, but using my left side? Pathetic. I was as uncoordinated as a newborn fawn attempting to walk. Punching and stepping with the left side of my body at once had been nearly impossible, and I'd stumbled into Cassian more often than I'd hit him. The right punches, those were easy.
"Get a drink," he said. "Then we're working on your core. No point in learning to punch if you can't even hold your stance."
I frowned toward the sound of clashing blades in the open sparring ring across from us. Azrael, surprisingly, had returned from the mortal realm by lunch. Moore had intercepted him first, but I'd gotten a second-hand report from Rhys that he'd found some sort of barrier around the Queen's palace and had needed to return to assess what might be done about it. Assess and brood, it seemed, since Azrael had barely managed a polite hello to me before launching into sparring with Rhysand, his face grim and tight. They'd been at it now for an hour straight, their slender blades like flashes of quicksilver as they moved around and around. I wondered if it was as much for practice as it was for Rhys to help his spymaster work off his frustration. At some point since I'd last looked, despite the sunny winter day, they'd removed their leather jackets and shirts. Their tan, muscled arms were both covered in the same manner of tattoos that adorned my own hand and forearm, the ink flowing across their shoulders and over their sculpted pectoral muscles. Between their wings, a line of them ran down the column of their spine, right beneath where they typically strapped their blades.
"We get the tattoos when we're initiated as Illyrian warriors, for luck and glory on the battlefield," Cassian said, following my stare.
I doubted Cassian was drinking in the rest of the image, though. The stomach muscles gleaming with sweat in the bright sun, the bunching of their powerful thighs, the rippling strength in their backs surrounding those mighty, beautiful wings. Death on Swift Wings.
The title came out of nowhere, and for a moment I saw the painting I'd create. The darkness of those wings, faintly illuminated with lines of red and gold by the radiant winter sun, the glare off their blades, the harshness of the tattoos against the beauty of their faces. I blinked, and the image was gone, like a cloud of hot breath on a cold night. Cassian jerked his chin toward his brothers.
"Rhys is out of shape and won't admit it, but Azrael is too polite to beat him into the dirt."
Rhys looked anything but out of shape. Cauldron boil me, what the hell did they eat to look like that? My knees wobbled a bit as I strode to the stool where Cassian had brought a pitcher of water and two glasses. I poured one for myself, my pinky trembling uncontrollably again. My tattoo, I realized, had been made with Illyrian markings. Perhaps Reese's own way of wishing me luck and glory while facing Amarantha.
Luck and glory. I wouldn't mind a little of either of those things these days.
Cassian filled a glass for himself and clinked it against mine. So at odds from the brutal taskmaster who, moments ago, had me walking through punches, hitting his sparring pads, and trying not to crumple on the ground to beg for death. So at odds from the male who had gone head to head with my sister, unable to resist matching himself against Nesta's spirit of steel and flame.
So, Cassian said, gulping down the water.
Behind us, Reese and Azrael clashed, separated, and clashed again.
When are you going to talk about how you wrote a letter to Tamlin telling him you've left for good?
The question hit me so viciously that I sniped, how about when you talk about how you tease and taunt Moore to hide whatever it is you feel for her?
Because I had no doubt that he was well aware of the role he played in their little tangled web.
The beat of crunching steps and clashing blades behind us stumbled, then resumed. Cassian let out a startled, rough laugh.
Old news.
I have a feeling that's what she probably says about you.
Get back in the ring, Cassian said, setting down his empty glass. No core exercises, just fists. You want to mouth off? Then back it up.
But the question he'd asked swarmed in my skull. You've left for good. You've left for good. You've left for good. I had. I'd meant it. But without knowing what he thought, if he'd even cared that much. No, I knew he'd care. He'd probably trashed the manor in his rage. If my mere mention of him suffocating me had caused him to destroy his study, then this. I had been frightened by those fits of pure rage, cowed by them. And it had been love. I had loved him so deeply, so greatly, but. Reese told you, I said. Cassian had the wisdom to look a bit nervous at the expression on my face.
He informed Azrael, who is monitoring things and needs to know, as told me.
I assumed it was while you were out drinking and dancing. I drained the last of my water and walked back into the ring.
Hey, Cassian said, catching my arm.
His hazel eyes were more green than brown today.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit a nerve. Az only told me because I told him I needed to know for my own forces, to know what to expect. None of us. We don't think it's a joke. What you did was a hard call, a really damn hard call. It was just my shitty way of trying to see if you needed to talk about it. I'm sorry, he repeated, letting go.
The stumbling words, the earnestness in his eyes. I nodded as I resumed my place. All right. Though Rhysand kept at it with Azrael, I could have sworn his eyes were on me. Had been on me from the moment Cassian had asked me that question. Cassian shoved his hands into the sparring pads and held them up.
30 1-2 punches, then 40, then 50.
I winced at him over his gloves as I wrapped my hands.
You didn't answer my question, he said with a tentative smile.
One I doubted his soldiers or Illyrian brethren ever saw. It had been love, and I'd meant it. The happiness, the lust, the peace. I'd felt all of those things. Once. I positioned my legs at 12 and 5 and lifted my hands up toward my face. But maybe those things had blinded me, too. Maybe they'd been a blanket over my eyes about the temper, the need for control, the need to protect that ran so deep he'd locked me up, like a prisoner.
I'm fine, I said, stepping and jabbing with my left side.
fluid, smooth like silk, as if my immortal body at last aligned. My fist slammed into Cassian's sparring pad, snatching back as fast as a snake's bite as I struck with my right, shoulder and foot twisting.
One, Cassian counted. Again I struck, 1-2. Two, and fine is good. Fine is great. Again, again, again. We both knew fine was a lie. I had done everything, everything for that love. I had ripped myself to shreds. I had killed innocence and debased myself. And he had sat beside Amarantha on that throne. And he couldn't do anything. Hadn't risked it. Hadn't risked being caught until there was one night left. And all he'd wanted to do wasn't free me, but fuck me. And again, again, again. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And when Amarantha had broken me, when she had snapped my bones and made my blood boil in its veins, he'd just knelt and begged her. He hadn't tried to kill her, hadn't crawled for me. Yes, he'd fought for me, but I'd fought harder for him. Again, again, again. Each pound of my fists on the sparring pads, a question and an answer. And he had the nerve, once his powers were back, to shove me into a cage. The nerve to say I was no longer useful. I was to be cloistered for his peace of mind. He'd given me everything I needed to become myself, to feel safe. And when he got what he wanted, when he got his power back, his lands back, he stopped trying. He was still good, still Tamlin, but he was just wrong. And then I was sobbing through my clenched teeth, the tears washing away that infected wound, and I didn't care that Cassian was there, or Rhys, or Azrael. The clashing steel stopped. And then my fists connected with bare skin, and I realized I'd punched through the sparring pads. No, burned through them, and I stopped too. The wrappings around my hands were now mere smudges of soot. Cassian's upraised palms remained before me, ready to take the blow if I needed to make it.
I'm all right, he said quietly, gently.
And maybe I was exhausted and broken, but I breathed. I killed them. I hadn't said the words aloud since it had happened. Cassian's lips tightened.
I know.
Not condemnation, not praise, but grim understanding. My hands slackened as another shuddering sob worked its way through me. It should have been me. And there it was. Standing there under the cloudless sky, the winter sun beating on my head, nothing around me save for rock, no shadows in which to hide, nothing to cling to. There it was. Then darkness swept in. Soothing, gentle darkness. No shade. And a sweat-slick male body halted before me. Gentle fingers lifted my chin until I looked up at Rhysand's face. His wings had wrapped around us, cocooned us, the sunlight casting the membrane in gold and red. Beyond us, outside, in another world, maybe, the sounds of steel on steel, Cassian and Azrael sparring, began.
You will feel that way every day for the rest of your life, Rhysand said.
This close, I could smell the sweat on him, the sea and citrus scent beneath it. His eyes were soft. I tried to look away, but he held my chin firm.
And I know this because I have felt that way every day since my mother and sister were slaughtered and I had to bury them myself, and even retribution didn't fix it.
He wiped away the tears on one cheek, then another.
You can either let it wreck you, let it get you killed like it nearly did with the Weaver, or you can learn to live with it.
For a long moment, I just stared at the open, calm face. Maybe his true face, the one beneath all the masks he wore to keep his people safe.
I'm sorry about your family, I rasped.
I'm sorry I didn't find a way to spare you from what happened under the mountain, Rhys said with equal quiet. From dying. From wanting to die.
I began to shake my head, but he said,
I have two kinds of nightmares. The ones where I'm again Amarantha's whore, or my friends are, and the ones where I hear your neck snap and see the light leave your eyes.
I had no answer to that, to the tenor in his rich, deep voice. So I examined the tattoos on his chest and arms, the glow of his tan skin, so golden now that he was no longer caged inside that mountain. I stopped my perusal when I got to the V of muscles that flowed beneath the waist of his leather pants. Instead, I flexed my hand in front of me, my skin warm from the heat that had burned through those pads.
Ah, he said, wings sweeping back as he folded them gracefully behind him. That.
I squinted at the flood of sunlight. Autumn Court, right? He took my hand, examining it, the skin already bruised from sparring.
Right. A gift from its High Lord Baron.
Lucian's father. Lucian? I wonder what he made of all this. If he missed me.
If Ianthe continued to prey on him.
Still sparring, Cassian and Azrael were trying their best not to look like they were eavesdropping.
I'm not well versed in the complexities of the other High Lord's elemental gifts, Rhys said. But we can figure it out, day by day if need be.
If you're the most powerful High Lord in history, does that mean the drop I got from you holds more sway over the others? Why I'd been able to break into his head that one time?
Give it a try.
He jerked his chin toward me.
See if you can summon darkness. I won't ask you to try to winnow, he added with a grin.
I don't know how I did it to begin with.
Will it into being?
I gave him a flat stare. He shrugged.
Try thinking of me. How good-looking I am. How talented.
How arrogant. That, too. He crossed his arms over his bare chest, the movement making the muscles in his stomach flicker.
Put a shirt on while you're at it, I quipped.
A feline smile.
Does it make you uncomfortable?
I'm surprised there aren't more mirrors in this house, since you seem to love looking at yourself so much. Azrael launched into a coughing fit. Cassian just turned away, a hand clamped over his mouth.
Rhys's lips twitched. There's the Feyre I adore.
I scowled, but closed my eyes and tried to look inward, toward any dark corner of myself I could find.
There were too many. Far too many.
And right now they each contained that letter I'd written yesterday. A goodbye. For my own sanity, my own safety.
There are different kinds of darkness, Rhys said.
I kept my eyes shut.
There is the darkness that frightens, the darkness that soothes, the darkness that is restful.
I pictured each.
There is the darkness of lovers and the darkness of assassins. It becomes what the bearer wishes it to be, needs it to be. It is not wholly bad or good.
I only saw the darkness of that dungeon cell, the darkness of the bone carver's lair. Cassian swore, but Azrael murmured a soft challenge that had their blades striking again.
Open your eyes.
I did. And found darkness all around me. Not from me, but from Rhys. As if the sparring ring had been wiped away. As if the world had yet to begin. Quiet, soft, peaceful. Lights began twinkling, little stars, blooming irises of blue and purple and white. I reached out a hand toward one, and starlight danced on my fingertips. Far away, in another world perhaps, Azrael and Cassian sparred in the dark, no doubt using it as a training exercise. I shifted the star between my fingers like a coin on the hand of a magician. Here in the soothing, sparkling dark, a steady breath filled my lungs. I couldn't remember the last time I'd done such a thing, breathed easily. Then the darkness splintered and vanished, swifter than smoke on a wind. I found myself blinking back the blinding sun, arms still out, Rhysand still before me.
Still without a shirt.
He said,
"We can work on it later. For now," he sniffed, "go take a bath."
I gave him a particularly vulgar gesture and asked Cassian to fly me home instead.
Chapter 31.
"Don't dance so much on your toes,"
Cassian said to me 4 days later, as we spent the unusually warm afternoon in the sparring ring.
"Feet planted, daggers up, eyes on mine. If you were on a battlefield, you would have been dead with that maneuver."
Amryn snorted, from picking her nails while she lounged in a chaise.
"She heard you the first 10 times you said it, Cassian."
"Keep talking, Amryn, and I'll drag you into the ring and see how much practice you've actually been doing."
Amryn just continued cleaning her nails. With a tiny bone, I realized.
"Touch me, Cassian, and I'll remove your favorite part, small as it might be."
He let out a low chuckle. Standing between them in the sparring ring atop the House of Wind, a dagger in each hand, sweat sliding down my body, I wondered if I should find a way to slip out. Perhaps winnow. Though I hadn't been able to do it again since that morning in the mortal realm, despite my quiet efforts in the privacy of my own bedroom. 4 days of this. Training with him, working with Rhys afterward on trying to summon flame or darkness. Unsurprisingly, I made more progress with the former. Word had not yet arrived from the summer court, or from the spring court regarding my letter. I hadn't decided if that was a good thing. Azrael continued his attempt to infiltrate the human queen's courts, his network of spies now seeking a foothold to get inside. That he hadn't managed to do so yet made him quieter than usual, colder. Amryn's silver eyes flicked up from her nails.
"Good. You can play with her."
"Play with who?"
said Moore, stepping from the stairwell shadows. Cassian's nostrils flared.
"Where'd you go the other night?" he asked Moore without so much as a nod of greeting. "I didn't see you leave Rita's."
Their usual dance hall for drinking and revelry. They'd dragged me out 2 nights ago, and I'd spent most of the time sitting in their booth, nursing my wine, talking over music with Azrael, who had arrived content to brood, but reluctantly joined me in observing Rhys holding court at the bar. Females and males watched Rhysand throughout the hall, and the Shadow Singer and I made a game of betting on who, exactly, would work up the nerve to invite the High Lord home. Unsurprisingly, Az won every round. But at least he was smiling by the end of the night, to Moore's delight when she'd stumbled back to our table to chug another drink before prancing onto the dance floor again. Rhys didn't accept any offers that came his way, no matter how beautiful they were, no matter how they smiled and laughed. And his refusals were polite, firm, but polite. Had he been with anyone since Amarantha? Did he want another person in his bed after Amarantha? Even the wine hadn't given me the nerve to ask Azrael about it. Moore, it seemed, went to Rita's more than anyone else. Practically lived there, actually. She'd shrugged at Cassian's demand, and another chaise like Amryn's appeared.
"I just went out," she said, plopping down.
"With whom?" Cassian pushed.
"Last I was aware," Moore said, leaning back in the chair, "I didn't take orders from you, Cassian, or report to you. So where I was and who I was with is none of your damn concern."
"You didn't tell Azrael, either."
I paused, weighing those words. Cassian's stiff shoulders. Yes, there was some tension between him and Moore that resulted in that bickering, but perhaps Cassian accepted the role of buffer not to keep them apart, but to keep the Shadow Singer from hurt. From being old news, as I'd called him. Cassian finally remembered I'd been standing in front of him, noted the look of understanding on my face, and gave me a warning one in return.
Fair enough.
I shrugged and took a moment to set down the daggers and catch my breath. For a heartbeat, I wished Nesta were there, if only to see them go head to head. We hadn't heard from my sisters, or the mortal queens. I wondered when we'd send another letter or try another route.
"Why, exactly?"
Cassian said to Amryn and Moore, not even bothering to try to sound pleasant.
"Are you two ladies here?"
Moore closed her eyes as she tipped back her head, sunning her golden face with the same irreverence that Cassian perhaps sought to shield Azrael from, and Moore herself perhaps tried to shield Azrael from as well.
"Rhys is coming in a few moments to give us some news, apparently. Didn't Amryn tell you?"
"I forgot," Amryn said, still picking at her nails. "I was having too much fun watching Feyre evade Cassian's tried-and-true techniques to get people to do what he wants." Cassian's brows rose.
"You've been here for an hour."
"Oops," Amryn said. Cassian threw up his hands.
"Get off your ass and give me 20 lunges.
A vicious, unearthly snarl cut him off. But Rhys strolled out of the stairwell, and I couldn't decide if I should be relieved or disappointed that Cassian versus Amryn was put to a sudden stop. He was in his fine clothes, not fighting leathers, his wings nowhere in sight. Rhys looked at them, at me, the daggers I'd left in the dirt, and then said,
"Sorry to interrupt while things were getting interesting."
"Fortunately for Cassian's balls," Amryn said, nestling back in her chaise, "you arrived at the right time." Cassian snarled half-heartedly at her. Rhys laughed and said to none of us in particular,
"Ready to go on a summer holiday?"
Moore said,
"The summer court invited you?"
"Of course they did. Feyre, Amryn, and I are going tomorrow."
"Only the three of us?" Cassian seemed to have the same thought, his wings rustling as he crossed his arms and faced Rhys.
The summer court is full of hothead fools and arrogant pricks, he warned. I should join you.
You'd fit right in, Amryn crooned. Too bad you still aren't going.
Cassian pointed a finger at her. Watch it, Amryn. She bared her teeth in a wicked smile.
Believe me, I'd prefer not to go either.
I clamped my lips shut to keep from smiling or grimacing, I didn't know.
Rhys rubbed his temples.
Cassian, considering the fact that the last time you visited it didn't end well,
I wrecked one building, and, Rhys cut him off,
considering the fact that they are utterly terrified of sweet Amryn, she is the wiser choice.
I didn't know if there was anyone alive who wasn't utterly terrified of her.
It could easily be a trap, Cassian pushed. Who's to say the delay in replying wasn't because they're contacting our enemies to ambush you?
That is also why Amryn is coming, Rhys said simply.
Amryn was frowning, bored and annoyed.
Rhys said too casually, There is also a great deal of treasure to be found in the summer court. If the book is hidden, Amryn, you might find other objects to your liking.
Shit, Cassian said, throwing up his hands again. Really, Rhys? It's bad enough we're stealing from them, but robbing them blind.
Rhysand does have a point, Amryn said. Their High Lord is young and untested. I doubt he's had much time to catalog his inherited hoard since he was appointed under the mountain. I doubt he'll know anything is missing. Very well, Rhysand. I'm in.
No better than a fire drake guarding its trove, indeed. Moore gave me a secret, subtle look that conveyed the same thing, and I swallowed a chuckle.
Cassian started to object again, but Rhys said quietly,
I will need you, not Amryn, in the human realm. The summer court has banned you for eternity, and though your presence would be a good distraction while Feyre does what she has to, it could lead to more trouble than it's worth.
I stiffened. What I had to do, meaning track down that book of breathings and steal it. Feyre Cursebreaker and thief.
Just cool your heels, Cassian, Amryn said, eyes a bit glazed, as she no doubt imagined the treasure she might steal from the summer court. We'll be fine without your swaggering and growling at everyone. Their High Lord owes Rhys a favor for saving his life under the mountain and keeping his secrets.
Cassian's wings twitched, but Moore chimed in. And the High Lord also probably wants to figure out where we stand in regard to any upcoming conflict.
Cassian's wings settled again. He jerked his chin at me.
Feyre, though. It's one thing to have her here, even when everyone knows it. It's another to bring her to a different court and introduce her as a member of our own.
The message it'd send to Tamlin, if my letter wasn't enough. But Rhys was done. He inclined his head to Amryn and strolled for the open archway.
Cassian lurched a step, but Moore lifted a hand.
Leave it, she murmured.
Cassian glared, but obeyed. I took that as a chance to follow after Rhys, the warm darkness inside the House of Wind blinding me. My fey eyes adjusted swiftly, but for the first few steps down the narrow hallway, I trailed after Rhys on memory alone.
Any more traps I should know about before we go tomorrow?
I said to his back.
Rhys looked over his shoulder, pausing atop the stair landing. Here I was, thinking your notes the other night indicated you'd forgiven me.
I took in that half-grin. The chest I might have suggested I'd lick and had avoided looking at for the past 4 days, and halted a healthy distance away.
One would think a High Lord would have more important things to do than pass notes back and forth at night.
I do have more important things to do, he purred, but I find myself unable to resist the temptation. The same way you can't resist watching me whenever we're out. So territorial.
My mouth went a bit dry.
But flirting with him, fighting with him, it was easy, fun. Maybe I deserved both of those things.
So I closed the distance between us, smoothly stepped past him and said, "You haven't been able to keep away from me since Cullen Mai, it seems." Something rippled in his eyes that I couldn't place, but he flicked my nose, hard enough that I hissed and batted his hand away.
"I can't wait to see what that sharp tongue of yours can do at the summer court," he said, gaze fixed on my mouth, and vanished into shadow.
Chapter 32. In the end, only Amryn and I joined Rhys, Cassian having failed to sway his High Lord, Azriel still off overseeing his network of spies and investigating the human realm, and Mor tasked with guarding Valaris. Rhys would winnow us directly into Adriata, the castle city of the summer court, and there we would stay, for however long it took for me to detect and then steal the first half of the book. As Rhys's newest pet, I would be granted tours of the city and the High Lord's personal residence. If we were lucky, none of them would realize that Rhys's lapdog was actually a bloodhound. And it was a very, very good disguise. Rhys and Amryn stood in the townhouse foyer the next day, the rich morning sunlight streaming through the windows and pooling on the ornate carpet. Amryn wore her usual shades of gray, her loose pants cut to just beneath her navel, the billowing top cropped to show the barest slice of skin along her midriff, alluring as a calm sea under a cloudy sky. Rhys was head to toe black, accented with silver thread, no wings. The cool, cultured male I'd first met, his favorite mask. For my own, I'd selected a flowing lilac dress, its skirts floating on a phantom wind beneath the silver and pearl-crusted belt at my waist. Matching night-blooming silver flowers had been embroidered to climb from the hem to brush my thighs, and a few more twined down the folds at my shoulders. The perfect gown to combat the warmth of the summer court. It swished and sighed as I descended the last two stairs into the foyer. Rhys surveyed me with a long, unreadable sweep from my silver-slippered feet to my half-up hair. Nuala had curled the strands that had been left down, soft, supple curls that brought out the gold in my hair. Rhys simply said,
"Good, let's go."
My mouth popped open, but Amryn explained with a broad, feline smile, "He's pissy this morning." "Why?" I asked, watching Amryn take Rhys's hand, her delicate fingers dwarfed by his. He held out the other to me.
"Because," Rhys answered for her, "I stayed out late with Cassian and Azriel, and they took me for all I was worth in cards."
"Sore loser." I gripped his hand. His calluses scraped against my own, the only reminder of the trained warrior beneath the clothes and veneer.
"I am when my brothers tag-team me," he grumbled.
He offered no warning before we vanished on a midnight wind, and then... Then I was squinting at the glaring sun off a turquoise sea, just as I was trying to reorder my body around the dry, suffocating heat, even with the cooling breeze off the water. I blinked a few times, and that was as much reaction as I let myself show as I yanked my hand from Rhys's grip. We seemed to be standing on a landing platform at the base of a tan stone palace. The building itself perched atop a mountain island in the heart of a half-moon bay. The city spread around and below us, toward that sparkling sea. The buildings all from that stone, or glimmering white material that might have been coral or pearl.